Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Tulsa Regional Chamber is hosting a State of Education event tomorrow, and my guest today is the keynote speaker. Jamie Cassop is Google's education evangelist. Yes, evangelist. And when you hear him speak, you'll understand why. He speaks to the challenges, but also the possibilities of public education and the potential of technology in promoting inquiry-based learning models. Those 21st century job skills that we always hear about, problem solving, critical thinking, creativity, and collaboration. Cassop's own story speaks to public education's ability to transform lives. His mother was a first-generation immigrant from Argentina who fled the country's repressive military regime. Cassop grew up in New York City's Hell's Kitchen neighborhood with welfare and food stamps, but he had graduated high school, college, postgraduate work, and for the past 12 years has worked at Google, helping found the Google Doc app, which is now used in millions of classrooms around the country. Today, as a Google education evangelist, he works with organizations devoted to education, innovation, and equity. He also helped found the Phoenix Coding Academy, a public school in Phoenix, where he now teaches a 10th grade communication class. He's also an adjunct professor at Arizona State, where he teaches classes on policy, innovation, and leadership. He's my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Jamie Cassop, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
You know, there's no shortage of major issues confronting American education today, from higher education worrying about how they remain relevant in a 21st century world. Of course, in K through 12, especially in areas like Oklahoma, it's about education funding, teacher pay. That gets most of the headlines. But in your view, what is the most important issue confronting American education today?
That's a great question, Rich, because I think the most important thing that we need to focus on is whether the education system is in perfect shape or whether it's falling apart, however you want to look at it. The key question is, do we have the right education system? Do we have the right education models for the future that we face? Because I think we did an amazing job with education for the last 100, 150 years, and now we need to do the same thing and ask ourselves, what does education need to look like for a future that we're facing that includes robotics, automation, computer science, and all those things that are coming our way?
What do you think it needs to look like?
You know, we've been talking about some of the basic skills that kids need for a very long time, right? We've been talking about problem solving, critical thinking, collaboration, creativity. These are the human skills, if you will. And we've been talking about these for so long, we call them 21st century skills. You know, we're 18, 19 years into the 21st century. So we've been talking about them for so long, and it's time to do something about them. So we would ask ourselves, what does a problem-solving education model look like? What does a critical thinking education model look like? How does collaboration happen, right? Because currently the education system is set up as a single-player sport, but in reality, we now live in a team-based world. So what does collaboration look like? So those are the things that we need to look at in terms of the skills that we're building. And then the content makes sense, right? We do need to study history and arts and sciences and all these other things, but in the framework of problem solving and critical thinking and collaboration. And I think if we can move in that direction, we'll start heading towards the path of what we need for the education model of the future.
How well are we doing at, say, problem solving and critical thinking skills in just an average American's educational life?
I think that there's some, you know, I get a chance to travel all over the world and all over the country, and you can always find a great school. You can always find a great classroom. So I would say there's pockets of excellence. There's pockets of schools that are doing some amazing things. We just need to take those ideas. We need to find those great ideas and expand them across our system.
Now, you talked about collaboration a little bit, and you're fond of using this analogy of education set up as an individual sport when you need to be more of a team sport. But that's a big change for the educational system to switch from looking at individual achievement to group achievement or the ability to work with one another as a main part of your educational attainment.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a mind shift, but it's also something that we do every day, right? You get evaluated, and I'm putting air quotes up, by your peers and the people that you work with. And I get evaluated by my peers and the people that I work with. So I don't get a letter graded at my job. I get an evaluation. And so I think we can do both. We can look at individuals' accomplishments and see what they're good at, see where their strengths are, see how we can help them build those strengths. And at the same time, look at how they fit fit in a bigger puzzle working together as a group because, you know, whether we like it or not, that's how problems get solved today.
Now, getting back to problem solving and critical thinking, one of the things you're fond of saying is, you know, we've asked students for generations, what do you want to be when you grow up? You say that's not the right question in the 21st century. What is the question?
Right. That's a great point you bring up. You know, we ask kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? Everyone's guilty. Every student I've ever talked to has been asked that question. It used to be a great question. Unfortunately, we don't live in that world anymore. Jobs are being created every day. Jobs are continuously changing. I saw something recently that said that the next generation of kids can have anywhere in the neighborhood of 30 different jobs, again, with air quotes. So that question makes no sense anymore. What we should be asking students is, what problem do you want to solve? What's the problem that spins in your head? And sometimes we confuse when we say problem solving, or when we say, what problem do you want to solve? We think we have to solve a world hunger problem or some kind of, you know, UN problem. That's not what I'm talking about. A problem can be anything, right? How to make better light bulbs, how to make better golf clubs, how to make cars go faster. What's that problem that you're passionate about? Because then the next question is even more important. What do you need to learn to solve that problem? What are the knowledge, skills, and abilities that you need to have to solve that problem? And that gets us closer to the kind of education model we need to build.
So how do you educate kids to the point where they know what skills they're going to need?
Well, that's what we need to do, right? So if a kid says, I want to make better golf clubs, what are all the skills that you need to do that? Who's solving that problem today? We can work through a lot of different channels, right? We can look at people who are building golf clubs and find out what they learned, find out what skills they have. Again, these common skills across the board, whether it's problem solving, or critical thinking, or collaboration, that happens across all industries. And so we can look at those, we can look at specific content, but the idea is to drive students' learning through something they're interested in, something they're passionate about, but also in a way where they can build the knowledge, skills, and abilities that they need because it's relevant to what they're interested in.
You've mentioned the 21st century skills that we're well into the 21st century now of you know, problem solving, critical thinking, collaboration, creativity, these four skills. You add a fifth 21st century skill, global competency. How important is that going to be down the road?
Two things, right? We live in a world where people work together to solve problems, and we live in a world, right? So, you know, I work for a global company. Many people work for global companies. And even if you don't work for a global company, you might be selling to a global place. Anyone can buy anything online. So if you're making cowboy boots, there's people in Spain who might be interested in your cowboy boots. There's people in China who might be interested in your cowboy boots. Because of the internet, because of this connectivity, the world is getting smaller. And so we all live in this global world. And so we need to understand each other, need to be able to work with each other, but also understand those markets, understand, you know, what are the things that people are interested in. Because, you know, when we build products and services, we're building them to users. And what happens when you have users who are all over the world?
Now, your company certainly involved in that. But I was going to just say, right now, we're in an era where America seems to be turning its back at the rest of the world. We're not wanting to let as many immigrants in, and the immigrants we are going to let in are not the same immigrants we've let in over the last 20 years. We're looking at a world in which we're turning our back on a lot of trade agreements and the idea of free trade. Is this interregnum, or you think this is a longer trend?
That's a great question, and I wish I was an expert in those areas. I wish that I could dive deep into what is the right trade policy, what's the right immigration policy. What I know about immigration is my personal story, which is my mother came to this country when she was young, seeking a better life. She was escaping government oppression, she was escaping poverty, and she moved to New York, you know, went to school, got her nursing degree, and did okay. But I was born in that process. I was born in New York, and I have that drive, if you will, where I want to do better than my mother did, and I want my kids to do better than I did. And so that, to me, the immigration story is a personal story. I wouldn't be here without immigration. And at the same time, I think I'm, you know, for whatever services my mother took on those first couple of years that she was here, I think I paid those back, right? So I think that if we look at immigration as these are a group of people who are passionate about life and are passionate about doing better for themselves and for their families, you know, America is still a place everyone wants to move to. So I have a lot of hope.
Yeah. And what are the essential skills in a global competency that we need to be teaching K through 12 or in higher education? What do you see them as being? within global competency?
Yeah, so it's everything from, you know, understanding how the world works. You know, we can learn a lot from what's happening in other countries. We can actually also teach other countries some of the things that we learned here. So I think that it's an important element to study. I think it's, you know, you can study other countries. I think travel is a huge investment in yourself. I get to travel around the world, and I love doing it and being able to visit other cities. You know, I was just in Hong Kong a couple weeks ago, and I'd never seen a subway system like that. And so as I'm seeing their subway system, I'm thinking, what does the New York subway system need to look like to match what they're doing in Hong Kong? So we can learn a lot from what's happening in other places.
My guest today is Jamie Cassop. He's Google's education evangelist. I should also mention he teaches 10th grade communication skills at the Phoenix Coding Academy, and he's very proud of that. He helped launch that coding academy. He also helped launch Google Docs as his beginning work at Google, which is used in education throughout the country from post-secondary to K-12. He'll be the keynote speaker for the Tulsa Regional Chamber's State of Education event coming up on Wednesday. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, one of the things, you know, we're talking about 21st century job skills, and that's almost like a buzzword these days. Another one you hear is lifelong education.
Right.
And I was really struck by something you were read an article about that said, here we are, we're talking about we have to be lifelong education. You know, education never ends. You're talking about earlier that maybe today's student might have 10, 20 jobs during the course of their life because of the cycle of speed in the workforce now, where professions will come into being and go away very quickly. Yet you said education often ends when you reach that degree, whether it's a high
right.
school diploma, an associate or bachelor's degree or graduate degree. And one of the things you're advocating, this was for higher educators, said, you know, why aren't you constantly talking to your graduates saying, is there something you need to help further your career down the path? Do you think that's an interesting model? Can you explain how that might work?
Yeah. So let's start with this idea of lifelong learning. I think all of us have this consciously or subconsciously, we discover that to be true. I remember when I graduated from graduate school, I said, I am done learning. I'm done. I never have to learn again. Right. And nothing is further from the truth. You're constantly learning, constantly have to learn. And so that's something that we all discover, that we always have to constantly learn. I've been at Google for 12 years, and I think about the computer types of programs that, you know, when I started Google, there was no YouTube, there was no mobile devices, right? iPhones haven't started, Android phones haven't started. So think about all the things that have happened in the last 12 years that you're always constantly having to learn new skills. I think we can formalize some of that. And what you're mentioning in terms of higher education is, you know, why don't universities reach out to their former students and say, hey, what are you doing today? And if, you know, based on what they're doing, as my daughter is, she's a film producer. She's working in New York as a film producer. The university, ASU, where she went to school, can say to her, hey, you took a lot of video production classes, and there's been a lot of updates to those video production classes in the last 5 years. Would you like to take a refresher course? Or, hey, you're working at a news publication and you didn't take a journalism class. Would you like to take a journalism class? So it's this idea that universities have an opportunity to have basically customers for life if they continuously communicate with them, if they continuously connect with them and help them on that lifelong learning path.
Do you think higher education is nimble enough to be able to do that?
I think some are. I think I'm seeing some universities kind of adopt that model. I'm seeing some universities working towards that. I see lots of cool innovation happening in education. I always like to remind people in the education space that, you know, we're exactly where we need to be, right? It's, you know, if you think about electricity, it took electricity like 50 years to catch on. I think we're in the same place with what's happening with automation and technology and robotics. We're just starting to figure out how this stuff works. And I think education's in the right place to take advantage of some of these new innovations.
Well, when you mention robotics and automation, I think a lot of people also think that this is a fear of full professions disappearing, of more professions disappearing. I mean, you'll see business publications in which, you know, whole categories of millions of jobs potentially at risk if automation and robotics takes place the way we think it's going to evolve. Is that something really to fear, or do you think those fears are overblown?
I think that you will find you know, half the people will say that all jobs are going away and they're all going to be taken over by robots and automation. And then you have half the people who on the other side who say, no, this is going to create new jobs. And I think it's somewhere in the middle. I think it's definitely going to create new jobs, but at the same time, they might be less of those jobs. So there's definitely something that we need to be concerned about, something to think about. But we also have to realize that automation has been happening for a long time, right? I've been working in the professional world for 25 years. And when I went to work, there was a calculator on my desk, and that was an automation tool. There was a word processing machine, and that was an automation tool, right? So I was at a workshop this weekend, and all of us had our laptops out, and we were typing up our notes. And I mentioned to the class, you know, it used to be a day where you would have to handwrite those notes and hand them over to a typist who would type up those notes. But those jobs don't exist anymore, right? So automation's constantly doing this. And so what we need to do, back to what you originally asked about, what do we need to do to prepare our kids? We need to prepare them with those adaptable skills, those human skills, where they're constantly being creative and solving problems and critically thinking and collaborating. And I think the jobs potentially can get better over time, because a lot of the automation jobs, a lot of the robotic jobs are replacing kind of mundane process work that isn't very fulfilling. And so we have an opportunity to create really good, fulfilling work for people.
I was talking to a futurist years ago, and he was saying, you know, when you look at some of the most devalued jobs in a then current economy, it was things like preschool teachers, you know, home health aides. And he said, these are the jobs that really can't be done by automation. He was suggesting at one point that we would see this huge sea change in the value of those particular jobs. I want to ask you from your viewpoint, do you see that valuing of the jobs changing? Because I certainly don't yet. Although I see I see the safety of them, because there's no way any sort of computer or automation system can control a room full of 5-year-olds.
No. If there is, let me know. I want to go buy one of those machines. No, I have a 3.5-year-old, so I definitely need one of those. But yes and no, again, I think that there is some value to those human skills, if you will. And I get to walk around the world thinking about, and I look at people's jobs and I say, you know, is that a human's job or is that a future robot's job? And your point, some of the jobs that you think are automatable are not, right? So the folks who clean windows at a skyscraper, that might be some kind of machine that does that in the future. But the housekeeper who cleans the rooms, that might never be, because of all the variations that goes into, you know, every time you walk into a room, it's a different setup. It's a different situation that you're walking into. So those are more human skills. The what you mentioned in terms of healthcare. Healthcare as an industry has been growing the last 20, 30 years. Same is true with education, right? If we are adapting this model of lifelong learning, we're going to constantly need people to teach us things. And so I think teaching and learning and development and career coaches and those types of human jobs are going to be more valuable in the future.
My guest today is Jamie Cassop. He's Google's education evangelist. He's also a 10th grade communication skills educator at the Phoenix Coding Academy, which he helped start, and is an adjunct professor at Arizona State. He'll be the keynote speaker for the Tulsa Regional Chamber's State of Education event coming up on Wednesday. First of all, I want to ask you, just take a step back. What is an education evangelist?
Right. So that name was given to me actually by the executive director of the education program in Michigan. When, after I got off the stage, he told me that I wasn't a manager or whatever my title was at the time, 12 years ago, he told me I was an evangelist. And I think the title comes from my passion for this, right? Like I mentioned, I'm a first generation American. I was born and raised in Hell's Kitchen, New York, right? This is not the Hell's Kitchen that you find today with the $21 tacos. I'm talking about the New York of the 70s and 80s. And, you know, it was a tough place to grow up, but I was able to graduate from high school and graduate from college and go to graduate school. And I get to talk to you because of education. And I meet thousands of people who come up to me after the events. And I'm sure someone will come up to me after the event on Wednesday and they'll tell me their story. And they'll tell me that they grew up the same way I grew up and look what they're doing today. And so that's where the passion comes from, because I believe education disrupts poverty. I believe education not just changes your life as an individual, but changes families' lives. Because now I have my kids and my daughter is in New York with a college degree. My 17-year-old is about to start higher education. You know, that's the power that education has. So I'm passionate about getting it right for a whole generation of students who can have the same opportunities that I had.
Earlier in our conversation, you talked about the pocket of excellence that are available all across the country. While there are pockets of excellence, there are a lot of schools that are in a lot of trouble. We have incredible socioeconomic disparities in educational mm-hmm. achievement, depending on where you live, what school you go to, where your school district is located. Oftentimes, who you're going to school with makes a big difference as well. How do we start eliminating some of these disparities? Because if anything, they seem to be getting worse.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that there is an opportunity to add a lot of value in this space. I agree that in some situations it feels like it's getting worse, and in some situations I feel like it's getting better. I think at the end of the day, what it all comes down to is will, right? Is the wanting to do this, the understanding that yes, we need to do things differently. So let's start doing things differently, no matter how hard it seems to do, right? And you mentioned the school that I helped start in Phoenix. I went to a superintendent and pitched an idea for a new kind of high school where we took computer science and we embedded into all the subjects. So these kids, these high school kids, are learning computer science, but they're learning it as part of their normal curriculum. So they're learning computer science with history and computer science with art, computer science with chemistry. So they're learning computer science for 4 years. And this is a regular high school. This is not a private school. It's not even a charter school. It's a regular high school. And it was the will of the superintendent and the team that we put together. And then we were able to put 9 teachers and a principal in a room for about 6 months. And we said, here's a blank sheet of paper. Let's create what that model needs to look like. And they built it. And so we're 2 years into it. We're learning. We're going to keep building it. We're going to keep making it better, but it's this model of continuous improvement, continuous iteration, right? That's what I think we need, is that culture shift to think that, you know, there isn't a future of education. The future of education starts on Monday and then Tuesday and then Wednesday and then Thursday, and it's constant and consistent. So it really comes down to will, as far as I'm concerned.
Now, you've been an education evangelist for a number of years. Now that you're in the classroom, what are you learning about that actual experience? Has anything changed about what you're learning?
Yeah, so I decided to go into the classroom, and, you know, as you mentioned, I've taught classes at the university level. I wanted to go in and teach 10th graders, and it's the hardest thing that I do, but it's also the most passionate thing that I'm passionate about, because these kids, they a lot of them are just looking to be turned on, if you will, right? They're just looking to identify what they're passionate about, and then they drive towards that. And in the middle of this semester, because I started this when the school year started, and I did about 12 classes this year. And in the middle of this, there was one of those David Letterman specials that's on Netflix. And he was talking to some star, I forget who he was talking to, but he mentioned that what got it going for him, what got him into his career, was a 10th grade public speaking class that he took. And I thought that maybe I got the next David Letterman in my class. And that's why I'm so passionate about being in the classroom and teaching. And one of the things that I'm going to say on Wednesday is to everyone who attends this session is there's a lot of expertise in that room. How do we take that expertise and put it into the classroom? Everyone can go into school and teach something. So how do we improve education, not by relying on our superintendents and our teachers, but how do we improve education as a community? How do we all go in and put some skin in the game?
Now, one of the things I was reading is about some of the assignments, you teach history, in this coding academy, and one of your assignments is not learn all the presidents, for example. You say, no, tell me about the first 4 presidents. How did they differ? How were they the same? What was their influence on the rest of American history? Is this the sort of thing you're talking about? Instead of trying to learn useless, or not necessarily useless facts, but facts that you can look up in your phone in 30 seconds.
Right, right. So I mentioned this in some presentations where I'll say to the group, you know, I'll ask someone to try to, you know, and I won't ever pick on anyone, but I'll say there's many of you who can't name me the first 4 presidents, which used to be part of an exam in some history class that I found. And the truth is, if you don't know, you know, I can give everyone in a room 30 seconds to tell me what the answer is. And so it's not about not memorizing things, because I have a 3.5-year-old. I want her to memorize lots of things like letters and numbers and lots of facts and figures. But at some point, we also have to recognize that we live in a world where information is all around us, and it comes at us at such amazing speeds that what we really need to do isn't put information in kids' heads, What we really need to do is help kids take the information that they have access to and convert that information into real intelligence that they can use.
One of the things you also talk about quite a bit is the idea of, yes, there's a world of information, but how to discern. I think you're fond of quoting a study in which it said 82% of elementary school kids couldn't tell the difference between a journalistic website and, say, a sponsored website that was espousing a point of view. As you see that as the necessary skills that we need to be inculcating at a pretty young age?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we just assume that these kids, just because they're born with technology, that they know how to use these tools. And the truth is they don't know how to use these tools. And that study that you mentioned was from Stanford, where 82% of the kids couldn't tell you the difference between a sponsored website and a real news site. So our job is to teach these kids as parents, as educators, to help them, to guide them. We make this assumption that they know how to use these tools. It's like making the assumption that I was born in an era where there were cars, so therefore I should just know how to drive a car, right? It doesn't make any sense. We have to teach them how to use these tools so that they can make sense of information, so that they know what's real, what's not real, so that they know where to look for information, how to vet information. Because they have so much coming at them at such great speeds, it's our job to teach them how to use these tools, to not just make them digital citizens, but to make them digital leaders.
In the course of your work at Google, where Google is ubiquitous in American classrooms today, I would think, helping launch Google Docs, and now you're in the classroom, you've had a unique perspective, and you've probably seen a lot of classrooms over the last few years. If there's one thing you could change today, what would that be in American education?
I think the one thing that we can do is empower teachers more. Right. So I've worked, like you mentioned, I've been at Google for 12 years. I've worked in education for the last 12 years. I've worked in electronic science tech. I was a consultant. I worked at Accenture for 7 years. I worked in finance and I've worked in banking. And I even worked in government for 2 years when I left graduate school. And I can tell you that out of all those workforces that I worked with, there is no more passionate and dedicated workforce than teachers. None. I can make a teacher cry in 30 seconds. You can't really make a financial planner cry in 30 seconds. They show up on Saturdays. They spend their own money. They're passionate about their kids. So I think the most important thing that we can do is turn to our teachers and say, how do you want to do this? What would you do differently? How would you improve this? As opposed to always top-downing standards at them and information that they need to have and rules and regulations.
Testing.
Why do we turn to our teachers and have them drive some of these changes?
Yeah, testing regimens, for example.
Yeah, right. There's not a teacher in the country that's going to tell you that we need to test kids more.
Well, we look forward to your conversation on Wednesday when you'll speak on the state of education at the Tulsa Regional Chamber. Jamie Cassip, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Jamie Cassip is Google's education evangelist. He'll be the keynote speaker for the Tulsa Regional Chamber's State of Education event scheduled for tomorrow at noon at the Renaissance Hotel. If you'd like more information on tickets and about the event, visit tulsachamber.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.